you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Welcome into the Hawks Talk Podcast. I'm Pat Moore from NBC Sports Chicago, joined by a couple of Stanley Cup champions from your Chicago Blackhawks, Jamal Mayers and Brian Campbell. How you guys doing?
Doing great. How are you?
Doing okay. Interesting weekend for the Hawks. They scored some goals, which that was good, but a win and a loss. A come from behind victory in Raleigh. A lead that they had 4-1 in the first period, a 4-2 after one period against New Jersey. They end up losing 7-5. What was your takeaway, guys, from these two games this weekend?
I think they're still finding their way as a group, who they are as a team. And I think that part of that is going through some pains. And the fact that they haven't really found that consistent game, maybe they don't necessarily have a trust in the process, having searched and played almost 10 games before these last two with not scoring many goals. And this team has been very fortunate in that they've never really had to worry about scoring goals. And Joel always preaches about, you know, focus on the defense. The goals will come, and they usually do. And that seemed to have dried up prior to this weekend. And unfortunately, they didn't necessarily, in my opinion, trust the process in this last game. They're up 4-1. There's no need to score another goal. The other team, the New Jersey Devils, has to press and activate their D a little bit more. That typically creates more odd man rushes for you if you're patient and structured and focused on the defensive side of things. And they didn't do that. They allowed the New Jersey Devils back in the game and ended up losing it.
Yeah, for me, I think, you know, they started to press a lot because they weren't scoring. You know, their D were pinching a lot more, and then they started giving up some more chances. So, you know, now they got their confidence back. They're starting to score goals. They really got to tighten up the ship here, and especially when you go into Wednesday's game, you play the Rangers. They're a pretty sound team, and obviously they got Lundqvist and Net. So you got to really shore up the goals against, and you can't get behind in games. You know, they had the lead, obviously, tonight, but in Carolina they got behind, and they're fighting their way back. So you'd like to just see a little bit more consistency throughout, you know, not giving up the odd man rushes. And that doesn't just go with the D. That goes with the forwards getting back and getting back into that, we call it a house, a five-man pack right in front there in your own zone, and then spread out from there. So a couple goals against New Jersey where they weren't locked in their house there, and they're giving that up. So you know, you don't want to give up goals in the slot. You know, you'll give up the shot that sometimes it goes in on the tips, and even against Jersey, you know, they scored a few from the slot, and that's where those are grade A chances. You know, Corey can't perform magic out there every night.
Yeah, we've seen the opposition score a lot on odd man rushes, or at least get glorious opportunities. But on Sunday night, it was those goals from the house. I mean, they were storming. They were coming at the paint hard. Taylor Hall there, you know, Miles Wood, who had the hat trick. I mean, most of the goals were from in tight, and they were second and third opportunities. Like, you think back to the start of that third period when Wood gets the power play tally. What you said it on the postgame show. They had eight shots on goal the first
less than two and a half minutes. I mean, eight shots, and you're down a goal going into a third period where you need to win that game.
And it's your backup coming in cold, Anton Forsberg, so to speak, after just a warm up. So, what did you see defensive coverage in that area? Why were they on their heels so much, and why were they giving up so many second and third chances in the house on Sunday?
Well, to me, you have to play in layers, and obviously, Supi knows this. Being a defenseman, is that it was too easy to get to the front of the net. And when they did beat the coverage, there was no help coming. And so everyone's a little bit too fragmented. You've got to find a way to make it difficult for teams to get to the second chances, to get to the front of the net. And I understand Joel doesn't want necessarily the defense to engage physically all the time. It's about getting your stick under people. It's about being hard on people with your stick on their stick so that they can't score. And if you let them get position like Miles Wood did on that power play goal in front of the net, there's two guys standing right beside him. You can't score with your stick in the air. Get under and lift the stick. don't give him that chance.
That stick should have been in the 300 level. Like, you know, Nick's got to – you got to come in there, and he played a great game, and I like the way he's playing. But you got to get in there, and you got to lift that thing. And he's like, it doesn't matter. That's not a penalty. You know, I know we're there's so many penalties now, and you can't get it. But you got to be aggressive and hard on it. And tonight, you know, the shots in the slot, you know, you want to get collapsing, and that goes with the forwards, the D. And then there was a couple rush chances against Jersey there that, you know, the D-men weren't in sync together. They weren't moving together. And that's, you know, that's what you have to see is you want these D-men to play so tight to each other, and you're just moving side by side, almost like there's a rope that's tied in between you that's you know, let's say eight feet long, and that's where you're moving. So, you know, I know they played the 7D and stuff, but still, that's an excuse that, you know, the Blackhawks can't afford to use any of these excuses now. They got to go out there and do it.
It would be nice, too, to see some consistent D pairings and some consistent lines for everybody's sake. You know, I think at this point, you know, at 8-8-2 with the 18 games, you know, we can kind of have a sample size of most of the players, and we kind of know what they have, their deficiencies, and their positives. You brought up the Nick example on tying up in front. You know, I think it speaks to the overall inconsistency of the play. There, we can pick player A and say, you know, he looked great those three shifts there. You know, a defensive lapse here, a defenseman making, like Jan Ruta having a couple great scoring opportunities and scoring on Sunday night, maybe some poor coverage a couple nights back when he was playing the right side but on the left. So, like, you know, it speaks to the overall inconsistent play that I think everybody on this roster needs to take their game to.
Yeah. I got a quick – Pat, we were talking last night in the Jersey game. They're up 4-1, and you're like, this feels like opening night again. And then all of a sudden, the switch just got flipped. They give up one, and then the second period happens. So, you know, it's just the inconsistency is all over the place right now.
Yeah, they have to – I think there's some merit, though, too, as well, with you talking about the pairings. I think that, you know, Joel's always been that guy, and I'm surprised almost 20 games a quarter through the season. Usually he likes to pick the six and then let them play themselves out of it. I think it's difficult for guys to play under that type of scrutiny and pressure. I say pick the six that it's going to be and play with those guys. And if you have to shorten your bench and even, you know, maybe play – I'd like to see, honestly, shorten the bench a little bit. Play those three lines or the guys that are playing the best. Play them until they are so tired, doesn't matter. That way, let them figure it out and play themselves out of it. And that basically the top nine guys are going to play, and that's how it's going to be on every single night.
Let me ask you this question. And, you know, you look at some of the veterans on this team, and we'll talk about, you know, maybe some lack of speed. When the Hawks are playing three games in four nights, would you be opposed – from the coaching staff to consider giving a veteran like one of those middle games off, thinking like I'm going to get, you know, a better effort, more consistent effort from said veteran on games 1, 2, and 4 or 1, 2, you know, 1 and 3 over four nights than trying to play them all three in a back-to-back situation. I mean, you were just in that situation. I mean, you guys always want to play, but you also look at the big picture and know, you know, it's all about speed in this league right now. And
yeah, it's a good point. You know, the way I look at it too is, you know, who is that guy we're thinking about, and is his 80% on a back to back going to be better than what you're going to bring into the lineup that wasn't playing the night before? But I do think, you know, I think consistency within the lineup is something that, you know, I think every player likes that. And, you know, being a player, and, you know, it's tough having 8D around, because you one mistake and you don't know if you're going to be playing next game. So maybe on the back-to-back games, guys know that, okay, you're going to be, you know, maybe you get those guys that were not playing for a stretch there, you get them into the back-to-back games to provide a little bit more energy. But it's tough to take out a veteran player that you know, is one of your key players.
I don't think you can do that. I think you just got to play them, and they're savvy veteran guys that adjust their games on back-to-backs. You know, and if you didn't have your legs, obviously, later part of my career, I didn't play all that much, so it really didn't matter. But when I was, you know, in the middle of my career, you just played different. You managed the puck better. Maybe I didn't get all the way in on the forecheck as much as I wanted to because it's a back-to-back, because you're playing three and four nights, you manage the puck smarter, you play smarter, you let the puck do the work for you. And I think veteran players have that. And a lot of times you've got to really let those guys work their way through it too. And I think it's a learning process for some of these young guys on how to manage themselves as professionals, how to manage the time and score in a given game, how to manage their energy levels game to game, especially when you're playing back to back to backs. But these guys are young. They've got to bring that energy every single night. And I think that's what you're seeing too.
Yeah, I think, you know, for me, the game against Jersey was not a back-to-back because they played the day before.
Okay, so it's always level playing field.
And they were playing on the road. It wasn't like they were, you know. So to me, that's not a back. We're all on the level playing field.
You take that part out of the equation. You say we're both tired. We both played and traveled last night. So I don't have to like micromanage my roster because of it, because the other team is basically in the same boat.
Correct. And I think it's also a mindset thing too. If you know, you talk to Duncan Keith, and I've spent many times talking to him, and we kind of, you know, really worked at the craft of our game in the mental side of it too. And you're sitting there, and you know, for these young guys, it's good to learn, because I know for me in back-to-back game, I felt terrible, but I wasn't telling my brain that. I was sitting there going out for warm-up saying, man, do I feel good. Like, oh, I can barely get around the ice, you know. But you have to. And these young guys, you got to get in the cold tub. You got to get your legs up. You can't be doing anything. And I hope they are doing it. And you'll see the veterans like Keith, what he does, and you learn off of that. That's the nice part about it for these guys. But you got to trick the brain sometimes. Like, there, how many games in your career do you not feel great? And it's a trick.
That's a great point. Like, you're setting the tone for the other guys. If you're taking middle games off in three and four nights, you know, a 22-year-old's going, well, wait a minute, hold on.
Well, of course you have energy. Yeah. You didn't play last night.
Yeah, right.
I used to walk into the room sometimes and just be like, man, I feel good tonight. I felt terrible. I felt absolutely terrible. But you know what? Maybe Tanner Kiro's going to hear that, and maybe Nick Schmaltz is going to hear that. And I'm like, hey, Nick, how good are you feeling tonight? Aren't you feeling great? You know, those are the things you have to do, and I hope, you know, I know Brent Seabrook's a vocal voice in that and in that room, and those are the things you got to come in and be like, and tell them how good you feel.
Good to see those acting classes you took have paid off. You really
– I used to skate around the ice and morning skate, and I'd mumble so – Taser could hear me, and I'd be like, I'm still a good player. And he'd get a huge crack out of it. So he, even when I see him now, he'll laugh about that. Because you do mental trickery, how you keep your confidence. Because when I got in the lineup, I hadn't played for six games. It's the same thing. How are you going to feel good about wanting the puck and feel – you have to trick yourself that you're that you can still do it and you're feeling good about yourself.
You're also going to keep the mood light when things are tough. Like right tonight we watched Sharpie ring one off the post. We saw Johnny with a couple great opportunities, a little snake bit right now, both of them. Is there somebody, do you think, right in that room that can bust chops, that can lighten the mood? Like, because the last thing you want is your is one of your cornerstones pressing and gripping that stick too tight.
Well, you know that the room better than I do because there's been a few changes since 13. So
yeah, you know, I think, you know, for me, I think you look at it and I don't know who the jokester is in that room. There are some funny guys, but you need to keep that light and keep those guys boosted with confidence. So that's the thing I think in today's game too. Now we want to see these younger guys do that more. Like Nick Schmaltz, you're not a rookie anymore. You're a veteran player. You need to push a veteran player just as much as I need to keep you positive. So, you know, maybe it is going up and saying, hey, you know, Sharpie's been around a long time. So it's like, keep boosting confidence. And that's what these young players got to hopefully learn and do, because, you know, that's what I try to do too as a player that's been around the league, because I learned that from other players going through, you know, my career.
That's something that Kane wanted to see the young guys take a step forward this year, compared to last year where it seemed like there were so many that were just kind of getting their feet wet. Now they realize that, like, you got to count on them. And that was one thing that came away from this weekend. I mean, you look at the goals that were scored. You know, it was DeBrincat with two goals in Raleigh and an assist. It was Saad coming through with the game winner. It was Schmaltz having a big – I mean, the young guys did emerge this weekend and showed that they're ready to – help pull this team out of any offensive slump.
Yes, because sometimes, I'll be honest with you, when you're on a team that's had success and you come into this situation, whether you're a young guy or even a veteran guy, a lot of times you're sitting around waiting and thinking, well, it's got to be Taser, it's got to be Kaner that's going to pull us out of this mess. And you start to realize, and I think they did, the switch did turn, and they realized, it could be me.
Yes.
It has to be me.
Right.
And it might not be those guys. It's not happening for them right now. And I think that they kind of figured it out. And that's why I really truly believe that's what's happened for Schmaltz and that's what's happened for DeBrincat. And I think for DeBrincat, he's just going to continue to soar. This is how he's played his entire life, getting goals every single game and points and racking up. 60 goals is a lot of goals. I don't care what league it is. This kid knows how to score. I think he's figuring it out, and I think he's well on his way.
Yeah, I think the league has changed a lot from, you know, when we came into the league, Jammer. These young guys are supposed to produce now. Like, around the league, it's happening all over the league right now. These young guys are coming in, and, you know, and I know it's Austin Matthews, and he's first overall, but what did he score, 40 or 50?
40.
40 goals last year, like, coming into the league. Like, these guys have to produce, and Nick Schmaltz has that ability. You know, and Ryan Hartman, he's going to get back in the lineup. He needs to come out with more jam, more fire. He's got to hit some guys. He can get to the net. He can score some big goals for this hockey club. So, you know, it's no more backseat, oh, those guys will do it. These guys got to kind of push themselves through and be relied on.
Yeah, and I look back to what Pittsburgh, 2 years ago, Pittsburgh got up to a really bad start. Now, they made a coaching change and things changed after that. But, like, it was the young guys that helped emerge to take the pressure off of Sidney and Kessel and, you know, to pull their portion of the rope. And they were the ones that took them to the finish line, you know, certainly in last year's cup. When we talk about DeBrincat, I know he's in a third-line role right now. It was a little weird on Sunday night because of only dressing 11 forwards. But ultimately, isn't he a top-six guy? Wouldn't you like to see him out there with a Patrick Kane on a almost nightly basis, or at least a lot of the time, to see just, you know, two gifted players and then somebody else who can do the work in front to give them time and space to let them do their thing?
I think you will, and I think Joel's let it happen organically. You know, you don't want to force feed somebody who's not ready. And I think when we're looking back and we're at game 78, I think we're going to say, wow, it's amazing what a season this young kid had with Patrick Kane. I think that's what we're going to talk about. But we're in the middle of the process now, and I think by the end of the season, that's where you will even forget that he started the first 18 games without Patrick Kane. That's how much success I think this young guy is going to have. And I would be shocked if he isn't in the top six by the end of the year.
I'm not even sure they had him pegged to even start the year here. So, you know, he's already advanced, you know. His play is brought him through. So another guy we're talking about, I know we're talking about young guys, but Forsling. You know, he's got it. He's starting to come, but he's got to skate with that puck. He's got to be getting up into that play every single shift. I know that's what I try to do when I was coming into the league. You know, yeah, you might give up some chances, but you got to force the play, get up in that play, and say, hey, you're not taking me out of the lineup anymore. I'm going to contribute. I'm going to be that fourth man in the rush, getting up there and producing for this hockey club.
So going forward here now, they've got a couple days off before the Rangers come to town. We saw some goals scored, so maybe that sense of urgency of going to Rockford to pluck a Vinny Hinostroza who's been playing well, maybe that doesn't have to happen right now. What do you think? Do you stick with what they have right now and just try to work the process, trust the process, as you say, and find that consistency amongst this group? Or do you need to rattle the cage a little bit and possibly send somebody down and bring up an Alex DeBrincat? Because at the end of the day, speed kills. And when we look at the success of this team, it's usually when they've got speed, and we know that Vinny would bring that.
I don't mind that at all. I think it sends a message. You're a quarter way through the season. This isn't acceptable. This team expects more. This team demands more. This team made trades this past summer to take their game to the next level, to win Stanley Cups. And I think it's a delicate balance. Obviously, you want to work through things out with the group that's here. But you also have to start winning some hockey games and creating some separation. So sending a message, I think that's an easy one to do. And it also rewards guys who are playing well down there. Now, it doesn't mean he's staying here the rest of the season, and it doesn't mean the person going down is staying there the rest of the season, but I think it injects some life.
If Vinny Hinostroza is ready to play and he's playing good down there, I know he's got 7 goals, 8 assists, like a point a game there. If he's going to help this hockey club, then you have to make that roster move. You know, I think I've always been told if you're – your play dictates whether you should be called up or not. And if his play is dictating whether he should be called up, then he should be here. And, you know, I think you look at it, it's not they're a 500 hockey club here. So, you know, his play will do the talking, and they'll call him up if he's ready, and or if it's somebody else down there that you can add, and you have to make those roster moves to make this the best hockey club you can possibly make.
I didn't mention this to you before we went on, but I'll throw it at you live here on our podcast. Anton Forsberg, we were all in his first two starts, even though he didn't get victories. You're like, hey, you know what? He got them the point. He got them to the overtime and got them a point. Are you confident that he is the backup to spell Corey for the 20 to 25 games that he's gonna that the backup is going to see?
I'm not. He played in Columbus last year. Had 10 starts. I don't believe he had one win. He played extremely well in the minors, but that's the minors. It's a completely different animal stepping into the shooters of the NHL, where everybody on the roster, even fourth-line plugs like myself, can shoot the puck and shoot where they want to shoot it. Time will tell, but I don't like the start that he's had. I'm not sure. I'm not convinced that he is a capable backup. That might be something that they'll need to address. I know they've got Berube down in the minors who's playing extremely well as well. And to me, you can't – this is very critical because the starts that he gets, he has to win 75% of them for them to make the playoffs.
They're
big points. Those are big games that he's going to have to step up and play well in. And when you're looking and you're not sure about your goaltender, as you know, Supi, as a defender, that really affects the whole group. You're like thinking, okay, we're going to have to score 5 or 6 goals every night.
Right, right. Like, I mean, when you're struggling like they were prior to this weekend, like a soft goal can be completely dejecting. He's losing his net a lot, too, like overcompensating, you know, he's sliding over and then losing his net. From your vantage point, where do you stand on the Forsberg situation, Supi?
Well, I think we're a little bit spoiled here because we had Scotty Darling as our backup, and he won games by himself last year. And you know, obviously the Hawks would love to keep him, but in the salary cap area, you just can't afford to. So, you know, I think when they signed Berube, as we said, you know he's played a lot. He's got some experience in the NHL. He's there if they need him as well. So, you know, we'll see. I think I don't think it's to that time yet. But I think he needs to step up, and when his name's called on, they got a soft schedule now till the end of the month. They don't play a lot of games. They got a lot of time off, so you know, hopefully he's putting the work in practice.
I think first or second, I believe they play back to back, so that might be his next opportunity, which is in a few weeks. And I know it's a difficult job. Think about it.
Yeah.
You don't play for 2 weeks. You're trying your best to replicate in practice, which with a team that doesn't practice very much.
Yeah.
And you've got to get ready to stay sharp and ready to go when it's your chance.
And a curveball's thrown at you every once in a while where you get put into a game like tonight in the third period, and they have 8 shots on goal in a two-minute and change span. I mean, it's not an easy job.
No, it's not. It's really difficult job. And, you know, part of that mental psyche is what separates the great goaltender. So he's got to find a way to capture that magic and be ready when he's called upon.
Great stuff, boys. That's going to do it for the Hawks Talk Podcast. We'll see you guys down the road.
Sounds good.
Yep, thanks, Pat.
Thanks for listening to the Hawks Talk Podcast. Wednesday night, Hawks in Action. That's on NBC Sports Net. We will have pre and post on NBC Sports Chicago beginning at 6 o'clock. We have pre and post for all 82 games on your home of the Chicago Blackhawks, NBC Sports Chicago. Go Hawks. We'll see you next time.